Well, I want to welcome those who may be watching this series on the internet. You're joining us for our second of three services on Sunday morning here at Emmanuel Enid, and it is a privilege to welcome my wife, Rochelle, to the stage. In fact, E.R. Andrew was telling me he loves coming to this series because the stage is a lot more beautiful. Yes, I thank you, E.R. We're talking about relationships, and if you're new, in the first service, had an Air Force couple, delightful family, Richard and Yolanda. It was only their second time to be at Emmanuel, so we helped them understand where we've been by giving a brief review. So, Rochelle, if you don't mind, tell us what we looked at the first Sunday.
The first week, we talked about what it meant to be in relationship with another person. That may be a relationship that you've entered into in a covenantal way, such as marriage, but it can also be a relationship that is a blood relationship or a relationship with a friend, coworker, boss, anything like that. But the word relationship comes from the word narrate, which means that I share my story with you. My thoughts, my feelings, my beliefs, I share that. I narrate my story to you. And you, as a person that I'm in relationship with, listens to my story, receives my story, takes in my story. The flip side of that is that people that I'm in relationship to who are sharing their stories with me, I listen to them. I receive their story. And we move back and forth in a rhythm in relationship by receiving and sharing each other's stories.
So, relationship is to just tell somebody what you think, what you feel, what you believe, what you desire, and listen to somebody else do the same. Now, that was the first week. Last Sunday, we got a little bit more practical, and I think the principle was a little more difficult. We tried to show you that you are neither the source nor the solution for the trouble or pain within another person. And vice versa, I have to reset the way that I relate to Rochelle by thinking to myself, look, Rochelle's not the source of any pain I have. She's not the solution for any pain in me. And vice versa, I'm not the source or the solution for any pain in Rochelle. What this will do is it will reset the relationship. Now, truthfully, when we got done last Sunday, I heard from a couple of folks said, this is impossible. I can't do that. I'm not even sure I believe that. And we understand. We understand the feelings because it sounds impossible. When you're in a relationship and somebody does something that hurts you, that gives you pain, they're the source of your pain. They're the source of your trouble. That's what you think. We are trying to help you see that life happens and things sometimes go south unexpectedly. God never designed another human being. I don't care if it's your mom, your dad, your child, your spouse. God never designed another human being to be your source of satisfaction and happiness in life. He is to be your source. And when I get frustrated in relationship, I got to reset the button by saying to myself those 15 words we tried to teach you last week. You are neither the source nor the solution for the trouble or pain within me. No, no, no. Jesus is my source, and he's the solution for any pain I feel. Neither am I the source or the solution for the pain or trouble you feel within yourself. Now, that's hard. If you need to listen to it again, go back and listen. But this morning, we've got to move on. And we're coming to the third principle of relationships called intimacy. And Rochelle, if you will, define intimacy.
We define intimacy as into me you see. So it's an easy little play on words there that help you remember that basically intimacy is transparency, being who I am, the ability to be free in who I am, being able to let it all hang out, so to speak, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and not be rejected for that. The one thing that we see is we all, most of us, have a deep desire for intimacy. But in our culture today, we've perverted that word. And when we think of intimacy today, we think of a physical relationship or a sexual relationship, and we connote intimacy with that. That's a perversion of the word. Intimacy is the ability to be fully transparent with someone that you're in relationship with and not be rejected for that. The opposite of intimacy is pretension, pretending to be someone that I'm not. And probably the best example of pretension is when we look at our kids when they're young, there is no pretension. They will run in. Levi painted tiger stripes all over himself during his rest time last week or a couple of weeks ago and was so proud of them, and the fact that he didn't get any of the permanent marker on the walls or on the bedspread that was on his bed, but it was all on his body. He was so full of joy over that. But the response of the parents made Levi understand that that is not the right thing to do. It's not the right thing to say. It's not the right thing to do. So we teach our kids to pretend and to put on a facade in order to be pleasing or to meet the approval of those around us, a grandparent, a parent, a teacher, a friend.
Tell you a funny story. And Rochelle's father had open heart surgery this past week, and it was successful, triple bypass, and we're in the recovery room. They've taken the tubes out. He's just waking up. He's looking good. And Don and Nancy, Don's 79, almost 80. Nancy and Don were missionaries around the world with the IMB, and Nancy's wanting to take a picture. So the grandkids, the kids, everybody's in there, but she didn't want Don to say cheese. She thought it'd be too hard. So she said, "Don, say joy." And Don says, "Sex." And oh, my goodness. Parents were covering the ears of the grandkids, and we couldn't believe it. Here's the deal. I tell you that. It's funny, but most folks think the joy of life is sexual. Young people, listen to me. You're in a sex-crazed culture. We want to convince you that you can have joy in life and never have physical sex. Yes, you can. Why? Because joy is tied up in intimacy, into me you see, of relationships. In fact, I'll put it like this. Intimacy is to relationship what milk is to butter. You really don't have one without the other. You may have an acquaintance. You may call somebody a friend. But only when you open up what you feel, what you think, what you believe, and you share it, and vice versa, you receive what others feel, think, and believe without rejection, without judgment, in full freedom. Only then will you experience the joy of relationships, because you have into me you see. And this is true of a mom and a child, a husband, a wife, and friends. But Rochelle, as you mentioned, pretension is the opposite of intimacy. And pretension comes naturally. Or maybe, I don't know that it's natural. What happens is, I think your illustration of a child is a good one. A child comes into the world without pretension. A child shares what's in his heart, what's in his mind. He's free to share because he's not been trained to be pretentious, right? I think in the early service you mentioned at grandma's house. What happens?
Well, we go to grandma's house and grandma works hard over a meal and is pleased to serve everyone beef stroganoff, but you've got one child who can't stand beef stroganoff and comes to the table and finds out what's being served and says, "Ah, I hate beef stroganoff." And grandma goes, and mom goes, you know, to straighten that, don't say that to grandma. Don't hurt grandma's feelings. And you have, the child then has to say, "Oh, I like beef stroganoff," in order to be pleasing to mom, to grandma, and to everyone else. Mm-hmm. So we train our kids to be pretentious because we can't allow them to say what they really think or what they really feel.
In fact, Rochelle, moms and dads will do this with their kids, you know, act a certain way, say certain things, project a certain attitude, and it's not who you are, but it's who we want you to be. And they'll do that out of a fear of what? In fact, this is what inhibits intimacy, a fear of
not measuring up to other people's expectations. If your family, or maybe you, are one who, or is one who, it's important that other people see you as having it all together, as raising respectful, disciplined children who understand right and wrong and do right and do no wrong. If that is the filter from which you relate to other people, you inhibit intimacy. Intimacy is not allowed to grow and to flourish in that type of environment, because there is a standard and everybody must say the same thing. Everybody must be part of that projection that we're a family that have it all together, or we're a marriage that has it all together. We love each other. We are always affectionate with each other. We never have cross words, and we want other people to think that our marriage is a healthy one when maybe just the opposite is true. I remember asking Wade about 7 years into our marriage, because I was really concerned. We had a lot of conflict, and it just seemed like we had daily disagreements, and not just daily disagreements, but multiple disagreements every day that were very passionate and very sincere. And I remember asking Wade the question, "How many arguments can you have in a day and you have a healthy marriage?" Trying to figure it out that way so we could control how many arguments we had so that we could say we have a healthy marriage. That did nothing to build or promote intimacy in our relationship. What it did was give us a platform from which we could appear to have a healthy marriage.
In fact, when standards are set in relationship, expectations are given and they're not met, there's this fear of rejection. And so what happens is a lot of times expectations are unspoken. You just know you can't do this. You just know it. And it's non-verbalized. And so you end up doing, thinking, believing, feeling what you think others want you to think, believe, feel. This happens in marriage in order not to be rejected. By the way, I want you to hear me very carefully, because this will help a lot of you this morning. The reason boundaries are difficult to set in families, boundaries of a dad and a mom to a son who's a drug addict, boundaries in a relationship where a spouse may be addicted to gambling or alcohol or prescription drugs, is because the person in relationship with the addicted one is too afraid of rejection, too afraid of abandonment, too afraid of the response of the person when the boundary is set. So boundaries are never established. And what we're trying to show you is this: God never designed you to learn your contentment based on the behavior of another person. I've learned in who I am to be content. And I am who I am by the grace of God. And the truth of the matter is, it may be your lot in life to be married to an immoral person. It may be God's providence in your life to have a son or a daughter who's addicted. Don't fight it. Be intimate in it. And here's how. Intimacy is a gift for special relationships. I'm going to show you how to set a boundary for someone you love. You can't be intimate with everybody. You just can't. You don't have enough time. You can be a friend. You can be an acquaintance. Your very close friendships, your family, and those that you spend time with, these are your intimate acquaintances. These are the ones that you're intimate with in relationship. Into me, you see. And let's say you've got a son who is squandering your money that you give him on drugs. You go to him and you say, "Listen, son, I feel that we give you money. And I feel that you're taking that money and using drugs. I feel that if that's the case, your drug use is detrimental to your life, to our lives, to your family's lives. We're going to draw a line, a boundary. We're going to give you this money. But if we see or hear or know that you're using that money for prescription drugs, illicit prescription drugs, this will be the last time we give you any money." Now, the reason that's difficult to do is because we fear the response of the person with whom we're setting the boundary. Ladies, you heard last week, "You are neither the source nor the solution for the trouble or pain within me." And you're thinking to yourself, "Are you kidding me, Pastor Wade? You're not living with the man I'm living with. You have no idea what he's doing." Maybe some of you men were thinking to yourself, "You don't know my wife. I'm asking you this question. Are you listening?" Whatever your intimate acquaintance is doing, your happiness or contentment should not revolve around whether or not they stop. Set the boundary, name the consequences, and love them whatever they do, enforcing the consequences of the boundaries that have been set when the boundary is crossed. Make sense? Maybe. Though intimacy is a gift, it requires some practice in order to develop it. In other words, what we're saying is this: unless you know the Lord Jesus Christ and understand who you are by His grace and know that you're never abandoned, you're completely forgiven, every need you have will be provided for by your Heavenly Father. He alone is your source. Unless you know that, you're going to look to other people and other things for your source. But even if you know He's your source, to develop true intimacy in relationships is not easy. So we're going to give you some principles on how to do it. And here's the first one, Michelle.
We have to focus on expressing what we feel, our thoughts, our beliefs, our convictions, our struggles. Focus on me. Too often, the focus is always on the other person. And it's easy to get carried away with your expectations of the other person in the relationship. That stifles that intimacy. It speaks of rejection to the person that you're intimate with or that you're in relationship with. When you place expectations on other people, you're basically saying, "What you're doing isn't good enough. In order for us to be in full relationship, you have to be performing at this level, or you have to be communicating in such a way, or you have to." So the focus is all about changing the other person and bringing the other person up to your expectations. Intimacy has to do with you. You being able to be transparent, you being willing to give and to share freely your own feelings. For someone like me, that's very difficult. In my lifetime, I have not been in touch with my feelings. My feelings were, I felt disappointing to other people, didn't measure up to what other people expected or wanted of me, brought rejection. So I learned to play down my feelings, to not acknowledge what I was feeling. I am an angry person. but I'd rarely show my anger because I have learned how to tamp down that anger and cover it up in a pretty sort of way. But it's not pretty. It's buried and it's destructive, and it hurts people that I'm in relationship to when the window on that opens. It's important for me to be able to share with a person I'm in relationship with, I'm feeling angry. This is what's going on inside of me.
Yeah. And you know, if you practice this with your child and you express what you feel, what you believe, what you think, or your spouse or your friend, then you'll refrain from speaking for them. In other words, I can always tell when a relationship is crumbling because a person in the relationship says to the other, "You never, you always think, you never feel like I. You never feel like I do it good enough. You never think that our kids are." And I'm like, whoa, hang on now. Good night. How many boundaries have been crossed in that relationship? You don't know what another person thinks. You don't know what another person feels. You don't know what another person believes. So stop speaking for that person. Only speak for yourself. This is how intimacy is developed.
The flip side of that is you have a responsibility in your relationships to work to create an environment that is safe for the other person to express what their feelings, to express their thoughts, so that when they express their thoughts or their feelings, they're received and that person isn't rejected. I tend to do that. I want to listen to what you have to say, except when I disagree with it, and then I'll push back a little bit.
Or what happens is, and this is what I would do in when we were first married, when Michelle would express her feelings of disappointment in me or feelings of dissatisfaction and so on, I would get very defensive. I would say, how can you feel that? Look at all I've done, and so on. Folks, I'm telling you, I was killing intimacy and didn't even know it. To develop intimacy, you've got to share what you feel. Feelings are immoral. What you think, thoughts are amoral. What you believe, you're just opening up. Into me you see. And then on the flip side, as Rochelle said, allow another person to freely express what they feel, what they think, what they believe. Because remember, if they're feeling frustrated, disappointed, in pain, you're neither the source nor the solution for it. So let them feel. Let them be. I won't share the story, but my daughter, Karis, has given me permission to just tell you that on one particular occasion when she was young, she was 17, I did something in her life because I felt like it was best for her, and she did not like it. But I think she would say to you, I was patient, I was loving, I was kind in the implementation of what I felt was best for her. And when it was all over, she yelled at me, "Daddy, I hate you." And you know, when she said that, I said, "Honey, that's okay. It's all right. It's okay to feel hate for me. I love you even when you feel hate in your heart for your dad." Now, I knew deep down when she'd evaluate, I knew she loved me, but I'm telling you right then, she felt like she hated me, okay? But I gave her freedom to feel. And my world wasn't turned upside down because she felt like that for her dad. It was a few years later, she came back to me and she said, "You know, Dad, you'd always told me you loved me when I was a little girl. But when I was 17, on that day, I shared with you my feelings. And you accepted me and loved me for the way I felt. I knew for the first time you loved me. That's into me you see." I allowed my daughter to open up what she was feeling on the inside without rejection. And it was a turning point in our relationship. But I could only do that when I reset the button in our relationship in my mind and said, look, I'm not the source nor the solution for the pain you're feeling inside of you. I love you, and you can feel, think, believe, whatever. It's okay. Here's another thing. Support one another. You mentioned this, Rochelle, without fixing.
Yeah, our tendency is to fix somebody else or to feel like you're to blame for the other person's feelings. Just like Wade said, to remind ourselves that we're not the reason for the pain that people are experiencing, just as they're not the reason for the pain that I'm experiencing. But when people share that we're in relationship, share their feelings with us, our tendency is to want to fix or want to diminish their pain. It's hard to sit and talk to someone who is in a great deal of pain and just hands off, just listen, just accept. We want to minimize it. We want to say things that might falsely encourage them or build them up. For some reason, we have an aversion to letting someone be in pain and just be with them there in their pain. Mm. And that's what intimacy is about. Letting someone be in pain, not trying to fix them, not trying to tell them something that's not necessarily true, but just to receive it. Be someone who is present with them in their journey.
Yeah, and so if someone in relationship you're with says, I feel like I'm a failure, listen. Don't jump in and convince they're not. Convince them they're not. Just listen. Because if we jump in to try to take away the feeling, we're thwarting the purpose of God in bringing all of us to a sense of resting in Him as our source of genuine contentment and happiness. Easier said than done for most of us. You know, right? Here's another thing. Trust each other through seeking forgiveness for failure. In other words, there will be times when you cross boundaries. There will be times when you do things, your actions are harmful or hurtful. You'll say things. You'll curse at your significant other. I mean, you'll storm out. You'll cross every boundary there is and tell that person how they think and how they feel, and you don't have a clue, but you're judge, jury, and executioner, and then you're out. Okay, well, how do you resolve it? Well, you take ownership over the fact that you're in pain, and hurt people, and you come back and seek forgiveness.
And seeking forgiveness is not the same thing as saying, I'm sorry. Seeking forgiveness is at a whole nother level. And seeking forgiveness, asking someone forgiveness for something that you've done, maybe it wasn't your intention. Maybe their filter perceived something in you that hurt them, but your intention was never to hurt. And that person voices their offense. Intimacy says quickly and easily, I am so sorry you were hurt. Will you forgive me for saying that, even though that's not your intention? Forgiveness is an act of humility, and forgiveness is one that has an eye and a heart toward the other person, and seeking a restoration with something that's broken. Mm. It takes a lot of humility to say, you know, will you forgive me? Mm. When your intent isn't there, and that's probably the biggest thing that I struggle with. If Wade voices an offense to me and I'm like, what are you talking about? I didn't say that. I didn't mean that. And I'll say, well, I'm sorry you feel that way. There's no healing that comes in that type of scenario. I have to recognize, I have to be humble and recognize that something I said or did triggered something in him. And I seek forgiveness of that. It's not taking ownership of his pain. It's seeking to mend a broken relationship and acknowledging pain is there, offense is there, will you forgive me? and being able to move on. Stating I'm sorry just simply is a stating of an emotion that we have. I feel sorry. I'm sorry that this occurred. It's not a making right of a relationship. Seeking forgiveness mends bridges and makes right. It leads to restoration.
Yeah, and by the way, to say I'm sorry for that you feel that way, or I'm sorry for that I feel this way. Yeah, feelings are feelings. Nothing to be sorry about. You feel that way. And so when somebody comes to me and says, I feel disappointed in you, good for them. It's what they feel. I'm not sorry they feel disappointed. I can't change that. I'll talk to them, but I'll just let them feel what they feel. That's intimacy in relationship. Now, here's the thing. It's extremely difficult as you develop intimacy to hang in there in relationship. Because if you're not used to it, then you're going to start hearing somebody express what they feel and what they think and what they believe. And if you're not used to these principles, you're going to take ownership of it. Stop. Stop. Don't do that. Let them share what they feel, what they think, what they believe. You're neither the source nor the solution for it. No. Let them feel. Let them think. Let them believe. And then when you start sharing, don't say to that person, you're responsible for me feeling this way. No, 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 no. No. I take responsibility for my feelings, for the way I think. And here's the deal. We've got a couple in the early service, the Moultons. I had breakfast with them this week at Brahms, and they've been married 65 years. And I said, Dwayne, tell me, what's the secret? 65 years of relationship. And he said, well, you know, Wade, I got married when I was young, 19. And Verna, my wife, she was 18. And I worked at Woolworths. And there was an African-American man there, my boss, who gave me little tidbits of wisdom and advice. And it was unbelievable. I said, well, what did he say about relationship? And he said, you know, he thought for a moment. He said, I'll never forget it. He pulled me aside. I'd been married about 2 weeks, and we had our first argument. And he said, Dwayne, listen, arguments are going to come. They're going to happen. Feelings are going to get frayed. Dwayne, please, never run. Because making up is so much fun. Let me tell you something. When arguments come and feelings get frayed, hang in there. Hang in there. Don't take responsibility for another person's feelings, thoughts, or actions. Take responsibility for your own. Don't blame somebody else. And hang in there in a relationship. And develop into me, you see. And I promise you, the real joy of life will be coming your way.